And a very good evening to one and all. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you for the next hour or so. And I'm currently in Osaka, Japan. I'm recording this on Saturday night. And boy, what a strange, interesting country Japan is, and what a weird city Osaka has turned out to be. And I'd like to talk during this hour about Japan, about Osaka, about the latest chapter of my travel expedition, which has taken me all around the world by land and by sea, where my next stop will be Tokyo, and then across the Pacific Ocean and across the United States. I'd really like to do that, but I can't. This week is different. Unlike all the other shows we've done, where I've been in Red Square, the streets of London, Piccadilly Circus on the streets of London, Tiananmen Square, Mongolia, places like that, even the Atlantic Ocean. It wasn't the same as this week, where in the States we are faced with something so traumatic, so severe, so shocking, that for me to ignore that and talk about my own petty world of adventure that I'm involved in right now, I think it would be irresponsible. I think it would be wrong. And I really have a lot of things I want to say to get out of my system. And maybe, just maybe, hearing them will help. I wish we could communicate by taking phone calls. Obviously, that's impossible with me on tape. But we can at least try and explore some issues together. And you can always write into us, too, at the radio station, otw@2600.com. Now, I've been fairly isolated. Being in China, there was no access to American media, at least not the kind of media that you can hear over the radio or see on TV. True, I did have internet access, so I had some limited scope as to what was going on. But I think even without that, I would have known something about this hurricane that was approaching the city of New Orleans and the states of Louisiana, Alabama, places like that. So while this was happening, in the back of my mind, I knew that if I knew anybody in that area, in New Orleans or any place in the Gulf, the other Gulf as it is, that they should be getting their asses out of there, you know, and it was a pretty important thing. And I knew this days before the thing struck. So when I got here, and I actually checked into this microscopic hotel room that I'm sitting in right now, and believe me, it really is tiny, I noticed that I was able to receive BBC World, and I turned it on, and I was simply transfixed by what I saw. What I saw on that TV set was a third world country. There's no other way to describe it. A third world nation unable to cope with a disaster. And yes, it was a disaster. But in an industrialized nation, you have a plan for disasters. You don't have your people starving to death. You don't have your people drowning in a sea of feces. You don't have your people imprisoned like animals with no way to help them. You don't have people imploring the TV cameras to send help because nobody is listening. You have a plan for this. You have a means of taking care of your people. And as I watched in shock from here in Japan, watching British media, because we don't get American media here, I was so struck by this, by the fact that, literally, nobody seemed to know what to do. And I cannot, to this day, and it's several days later, I can't figure this out. I can't figure out how authorities could have been so completely clueless as to not have something in place. Now, there's a whole lot of things to look at, a whole lot of things to analyze. The reaction of the citizens, the reaction of the government, what was done right, what was done wrong. But what we really have to analyze here is how this happened in the first place. And I'm afraid the answer to that is quite simple. And it's something that really shouldn't surprise very many people. We've been seeing the signs of this coming for a very long time, with all kinds of budget cuts and tax rebates and attention paid to all kinds of endeavors in far-off lands. We've ignored the infrastructure here. We've ignored the people here. We've certainly ignored the poor people here. And we were very lucky for a very long time. But this kind of a thing was inevitable as a levee eventually breaking. Especially in a hurricane one level above what it was rated to withstand. Now, you know, I know a lot of people look at the news. I'm not sure what the news looks like back home. Maybe it's substantially different from what I'm seeing here. But they see the poor people who are stuck in their neighborhood, who didn't evacuate. And you're tempted to say, what a bunch of idiots. I mean, anybody knows that a hurricane like this coming, you get on out of there. Emmanuel knew he was in China. How did he know? Why didn't you know? Why didn't you get out of there? And then, of course, that leads to, well, this is what you get. This is what you get for staying. You should have listened to the authorities. Okay, kind of callous, but fair. A fair point to make. Yes, they should have evacuated. Now, let's just look at that a little closer. All right, you have these people who live in very poor neighborhoods as it is. You have people who are sick, and you have little children. Now then, you tell them to evacuate. What exactly does that mean? Does it mean line up, wait for the bus, get on the train, hop on a flight? What? What exactly does it mean? You see, the thing that I didn't realize, and I don't think most people in the country realized, was that there was no way for these people to leave. There was no plan in place. They couldn't just go someplace. There was no transportation to take them. These people did not have cars. So how exactly do you evacuate a city when you don't have a way of getting out? And of course, the second part of that question is, where do you go? Where exactly do you go? You know, a lot of us don't have summer homes up north that we can just hop on a Learjet and go to. So many of these people were stranded, forgotten, and especially the old people, who certainly couldn't just get up and walk away, all the people in hospitals. I think that shows right there that there was no plan in place, that people would even be in hospitals. If there was a plan in place, all those people would have been moved. Did the patients in the hospital say, no, we're staying. We refuse to move. We're going to ride this storm out. Did the senior citizens, the 75, 80-year-old people, did they say, absolutely not, no way? I'm staying put. I don't think so. I don't think they had that option. So when you say, yeah, they should have evacuated, I agree. They should have evacuated. But in a civilized society, you take care of those people who can't take care of themselves for whatever reason, either because they're handicapped, infirm, poor, or children. So the question now is, why? Why in God's name wasn't there a plan in place? Obviously, Louisiana is one of the poorer states in the country, so they rely heavily on federal aid. That federal aid was not there. It did not show up for days. Let me take a look at one of the newspaper articles. In fact, this is from the Daily Yomiuri, which is what I get here in Osaka. And this came out today, Saturday, September 3rd. Storm victims were raped and beaten. Fights and fires broke out. Rotting corpses lay in the open, and rescue helicopters and law enforcement officers were shot at as hurricane-flooded New Orleans descended into anarchy. This is a desperate SOS, the mayor said. Anger mounted Thursday across the ruined city, with thousands of Hurricane Katrina victims increasingly hungry, desperate, and tired of waiting for buses to take them out. We are out here like pure animals. We don't have help, the Reverend Isaac Clark, 68 years old, said outside the New Orleans Convention Center, where corpses lay in the open, and he and other evacuees complained that they were dropped off and given nothing, neither food, water, nor medicine. About 15 to 20,000 people who had taken shelter at the convention center to await buses grew increasingly hostile. Police Chief Eddie Compass said he sent in 88 officers to quell the situation at the building, but they were quickly beaten back by an angry mob. You think you might be angry too in a situation like that? I suspect I might be. And this was the convention center. This wasn't even the Superdome. Oh my God, the things that happened in the Superdome. Compass said, we have individuals who are getting raped, we have individuals who are getting beaten. Tourists are walking in that direction and they are getting preyed upon. In hopes of diffusing the unrest at the convention center, New Orleans Mayor Ray Nagin gave the refugees permission to march across a bridge to the city's unflooded West Bank for whatever relief they could find, but the bedlam at the convention center appeared to make leaving rather difficult. A military helicopter tried to land at the convention center several times to drop off food and water, but the rushing crowd forced the choppers to back off. Unfortunately, people aren't thinking clearly in this situation. I think maybe, you know, 5 days without supplies being abandoned like this can turn people into what they really not. And I don't understand why it was so difficult to get supplies. It doesn't make any sense to me. Yeah, okay, in the middle of a hurricane, you can't fly a helicopter. But, you know, the hurricane left many days ago. How is it that it takes so long to get supplies to these people? And there's all kinds of ways you can do it. I mean, I am not an expert at this at all, but it seems to me with all the military apparatus out there, you could have a constant convoy of helicopters, airplanes dropping things from the sky with parachutes so that they land all over the place. And this should be happening constantly, day and night. What prevented that? The promises of buses to take the people out. Promises heard for days. Buses never showed up. How is that possible? What kind of excuse is there for buses not showing up? Clearly there was no plan, no plan at all, no coordination. It was really quite disgusting. And of course, we have to pin the blame where the blame deserves to be pinned. Look at what the priorities of this nation have become. We've been talking about this for years on this program. The whole Iraq situation, now we're seeing the other side of it. In addition to having our people killed over there, in addition to losing the respect of the rest of the world, in addition to wasting so much time and causing so much pain all throughout the globe, this is the cost back home. Because our National Guardsmen were not there. Because most of them were overseas. Because the money was not there. Because the money had been spent and budgets had been cut. And things had not been maintained and plans were not in place. There's a direct connection to this. And, you know, I already see exactly how this is playing out with the right wing, with the Bush defenders, who seek to defend him even in these most shameful days. And their catchphrase, I've heard it a couple of times, and I know that they're going to latch on to this. Their catchphrase will be, "Don't blame Bush for the hurricane." Yeah, as if that's what people are blaming Bush for the hurricane. They're not blaming him for the hurricane. They're blaming him for the reaction to the hurricane. Big difference. And the reaction was woefully inadequate. The reaction was pitiful. The reaction was shameful. I want to read you something from the New York Times. This came out on September 1st, a couple of days ago. And keep in mind, this is well after the magnitude of the storm had been felt, well after people had been waiting for help, well after help should have arrived. This is an editorial. It's entitled, "Waiting for a Leader." George W. Bush gave one of the worst speeches of his life yesterday, especially given the level of national distress and the need for words of consolation and wisdom. In what seems to be a ritual in this administration, the president appeared a day later than he was needed. He then read an address of equality more appropriate for an Arbor Day celebration. A long list of pounds of ice, generators, and blankets delivered to the stricken Gulf Coast. He advised the public that anybody who wanted to help should send cash, grinned, and promised that everything would work out in the end. We will, of course, endure, and the city of New Orleans must come back, but looking at the pictures on television yesterday of a place abandoned to the forces of flood, fire, and looting, it was hard not to wonder exactly how that is going to come to pass. Right now, hundreds of thousands of American refugees need our national concern and care. Thousands of people still need to be rescued from imminent peril. Public health threats must be controlled in New Orleans and throughout southern Mississippi. Drivers must be given confidence that gasoline will be available, and profiteering must be brought under control at a moment when television has been showing long lines at some pumps and spot prices approaching $4 a gallon have been reported. Sacrifices may be necessary to make sure that all these things happen in an orderly, efficient way, but this administration has never been one to counsel sacrifice, and nothing about the president's demeanor yesterday, which seemed casual to the point of carelessness, suggested that he understood the depth of the current crisis. While our attention must now be on the Gulf Coast's most immediate needs, the nation will soon ask why New Orleans' levees remain so inadequate. Publications from the local newspaper to National Geographic have fulminated about the bad state of flood protection in this beloved city, which is below sea level. Why were developers permitted to destroy wetlands and barrier islands that could have held back the hurricane surge? Why was Congress, before it wandered off to vacation, engaged in slashing the budget for correcting some of the gaping holes in the area's flood protection? It would be some comfort to think that, as Mr. Bush cheerily announced, America will be a stronger place for enduring this crisis. Complacency will no longer suffice, especially if experts are right in warning that global warming may increase the intensity of future hurricanes. But since this administration won't acknowledge that global warming exists, the chances of leadership seem minimal. Again, that's an editorial from the New York Times, dated September 1st. And I also like to look at something came out the following day in the Times. This is an op-ed piece from Paul Krugman. Before 9/11, the Federal Emergency Management Agency listed the three most likely catastrophic disasters facing America: a terrorist attack on New York, a major earthquake in San Francisco, and a hurricane strike in New Orleans. The New Orleans hurricane scenario, the Houston Chronicle wrote in December 2001, may be the deadliest of all. It described a potential catastrophe very much like the one now happening. So, why were New Orleans and the nation so unprepared? After 9/11, hard questions were deferred in the name of national unity, then buried under a thick coat of whitewash. This time, we need accountability. First question, why have aid and security taken so long to arrive? Katrina hit 5 days ago, and it was already clear by last Friday that Katrina could do immense damage along the Gulf Coast, yet the response you'd expect from an advanced country never happened. Thousands of Americans are dead or dying, not because they refused to evacuate, but because they were too poor or too sick to get out without help, and help wasn't provided. Many have yet to receive any help at all. There will and should be many questions about the response of state and local governments. In particular, couldn't they have done more to help the poor and sick escape? But the evidence points above all to a stunning lack of both preparation and urgency in the federal government's response. Even military resources in the right place weren't ordered into action. According to the Sun-Herald of Biloxi, Mississippi, on Wednesday, reporters listening to horrific stories of death and survival at the Biloxi Junior High School shelter looked north across Irish Hill Road and saw Air Force personnel playing basketball and performing calisthenics. Playing basketball and performing calisthenics. Maybe administration officials believed that the local National Guard could keep order and deliver relief, but many members of the National Guard and much of its equipment, including high water vehicles, are in Iraq. The National Guard needs that equipment back home to support the Homeland Security mission, a Louisiana Guard officer told reporters several weeks ago. Second question, why wasn't more preventive action taken? After 2003, the Army Corps of Engineers sharply slowed its flood control work, including work on sinking levees. The Corps, an editor and publisher article says, citing a series of articles in the Times-Picayune in New Orleans, never tried to hide the fact that the spending pressures of the war in Iraq, as well as Homeland Security, coming at the same time as federal tax cuts, was the reason for the strain. In 2002, the Corps' chief resigned, reportedly under threat of being fired, after he criticized the administration's proposed cuts in the Corps' budget, including flood control spending. Third question, did the Bush administration destroy FEMA's effectiveness? The administration has, by all accounts, treated the Emergency Management Agency like an unwanted stepchild, leading to a mass exodus of experienced professionals. Last year, James Lee Witt, who won bipartisan praise for his leadership of the agency during the Clinton years, said at a congressional hearing, "I am extremely concerned that the ability of our nation to prepare for and respond to disasters has been sharply eroded. I hear from emergency managers, local and state leaders, and first responders nearly every day that the FEMA they knew and worked well with has now disappeared." And yesterday, Mr. Bush made an utterly fantastic claim that nobody expected the breach of the levees. In fact, there had been repeated warnings about exactly that risk. So America, once famous for its can-do attitude, now has a can't-do government that makes excuses instead of doing its job. And while it makes those excuses, Americans are dying. I can't tell you, sitting here in Japan, how helpless I feel, how angry I feel, just seeing this in the papers, seeing this on the BBC that I'm able to watch, connecting online and reading the accounts and seeing various websites. And one thing that really hit me hard was something that you may have heard by now. It's being passed all over the place. It's been on all kinds of media outlets, and it's all over the internet. It's excerpts from an interview that the mayor of New Orleans conducted at radio station WWL in New Orleans. And I have to say, it's times like this that you realize the importance, the absolute importance, in case you hadn't already, of local radio. And WWL is a station I've listened to in New Orleans. I've listened to them in New York, actually, because the signal is able to skip at night. And being in certain situations, among them hurricanes, flash floods, things like that, and tuning to a station, usually on the AM dial, and hearing the reports coming in, hearing listeners phone in, getting updates, there's nothing more important than that. There's nothing more important than reaching out to the people and letting them know what's going on. Because God knows in this situation, that was not coming from any of the authorities because they weren't there. People in the Superdome were abandoned. Nobody was in charge. I saw a BBC report that said there apparently was one nurse in the Superdome. for 25,000 people, or however many they wound up having there. So Mayor Ray Nagin gave an interview over the phone. I think this happened on Friday. And I'd like to play an excerpt of that for those people who don't have access to the net and might not have seen the many places that it's linked to, just to give you a sense of the frustration of the mayor of this city when trying to deal with federal and state authorities. And I happen to think that his way of expressing himself is very straightforward, something unusual in the world of politics. So let's take a listen to what Mayor Ray Nagin had to say over the airwaves of WWL a couple of days ago. And we'll be back right after this.
You call him right now, and you call the governor, and you tell him to delegate the powers that they have to the mayor of New Orleans, and we'll get this damn thing fixed. It's politics, man, and they're playing games, and they're spinning. They're out there spinning for the cameras.
But can't they just, if nothing else, look at 25% of their energy coming from the state is not flowing through the pipelines? We're on the verge of anarchy. Can't they understand that they're, if nothing else, they're going to be hurt politically?
I don't know what they're doing. I mean, the air conditioning must be good because I haven't had any in 5 days. And maybe there's some smoke coming out of the air conditioning units that's clogging some folks, their vision.
But talked with the president?
I've talked directly with the president.
What did he
say?
Talked
to the head of the Homeland Security. I've talked to everybody under the sun. I've been out there, man. I flew these helicopters, been in the crowds, talking to people, crying, don't know where their relatives are. I've done it all, man, and I tell you, man, Garland, I keep hearing that it's coming. This is coming, that is coming. And my answer to that today is BS. Where is the beef? Because there is no beef in this city. There's no beef anywhere in southeast Louisiana, and these goddamn ships that are coming, I don't see them.
What did you say to the President of the United States, and what did he say to you?
I basically told him we had an incredible crisis here, and that his flying over in Air Force One does not do it justice. And that I have been all around this city, and I am very frustrated because we are not able to marshal resources, and we're outmanned in just about every respect. You know the reason why the looters got out of control? Because we had most of our resources saving people, thousands of people, that were stuck in attics, man, old ladies. When you pull off the doggone ventilator vent and you look down there and they're standing in there in water up to their freaking neck. And they don't have a clue what's going on down there. They flew down here one time, 2 days after the doggone event was over, with TV cameras, AP reporters, all kind of goddamn, excuse my French, everybody in America. But I am pissed.
Did you say to the President of the United States, I need the military in here?
I said I need everything. Now, I will tell you this, and I give the President some credit on this. He sent one John Wayne dude down here that can get some stuff done, and his name is General Honore. And he came off the doggone chopper, and he started cussing, and people started moving. And he's getting some stuff done. They ought to give that guy, if they don't want to give it to me, give him full authority to get the job done. And we can save some people.
What do you need right now to get control of this situation?
I need reinforcements. I need troops, man. I need 500 buses, man. We're talking about, you know, one of the briefings we had, they were talking about getting, public school bus drivers to come down here and bus people out here. I'm like, you gotta be kidding me. This is a national disaster. Get every doggone Greyhound bus line in the country and get their asses moving to New Orleans. That's they thinking small, man, and this is a major, major, major deal. And I can't emphasize it enough, man. This is crazy. I've got 15 to 20,000 people over at the convention center. It's bursting at the seams. The poor people in Plaquemines Parish, their air vacuum people over here in New Orleans, we don't have anything, and we're sharing with our brothers in Plaquemines Parish. It's awful down here, man.
Do you believe that the president is seeing this, holding news conference on it, but can't do anything until Kathleen Blanco requests him to do it? And do you know whether or not she has made that request?
I have no idea what they're doing, but I will tell you this. You know, God is looking down on all this, and if they are not doing everything in their power to save people, they are going to pay the price. Because every day that we delay, people are dying. And they're dying by the hundreds, I'm willing to bet you. We're getting reports and calls that is breaking my heart from people saying, I've been in my attic. I can't take it anymore. The water is up to my neck. I don't think I can hold out. And that's happening as we speak. And you know what really upsets me, Garland? We told everybody the importance of the 17th Street Canal issue. We said, please, please take care of this. We don't care what you do. Figure it out.
Who'd you say that to?
Everybody. The governor, you know, Homeland Security, FEMA, you name it, we said it. And, you know, they allowed that pumping station next to it, Pumping Station 6, to go underwater. Our sewage and water board people, Marcia St. Martin, stayed there and endangered their lives. And what happened when that pumping station went down, the water started flowing again in the city. And it started getting to levels that probably killed more people. In addition to that, we had water flowing through the pipes in the city. That's a power station over there. So there's no water flowing anywhere on the east bank of Orleans Parish. So a critical water supply was destroyed because of lack of action.
Why couldn't they drop the 3,000-pound sandbags or the containers that they were talking about earlier? Was it an engineering feat that just couldn't be done?
They said it was some pulleys that they had to manufacture, but, you know, in a state of emergency, man, you are creative. You figure out ways to get stuff done. Then they told me that they went overnight and they built 17 concrete structures, and they had the pulleys on them, and they were going to drop them. I flew over that thing yesterday, and it's in the same shape that it was after the storm hit. There is nothing happening. And they're feeding the public a line of bull, and it's spinning, and people are dying down here.
If some of the public called, and they're right, that there's a law that the president, that the federal government can't do anything without local or state requests, would you request martial law?
I've already called for martial law in the city of New Orleans. We did that a few days ago.
Did the governor do that too?
I don't know. I don't think so. But we called for martial law when we realized that the looting was getting out of control, and we redirected all of our police officers back to patrolling the streets. They were dead tired from saving people, but they worked all night because we thought this thing was going to blow wide open last night. And so we redirected all of our resources, and we held it under check. I'm not sure if we can do that another night with the current resources. And I am telling you right now, they're showing all these reports of people looting and doing all that weird stuff, and they are doing that. But people are desperate, and they're trying to find food and water, the majority of them. Now, you got some knuckleheads out there, and they are taking advantage of this lawless situation where, you know, we can't really control it. And they are doing some awful, awful things. But that's a small majority of the people. Most people are looking to try and survive. And you've got one of the things people have, nobody's talked about this. Drugs flowed in and out of New Orleans and the surrounding metropolitan area so freely it was scary to me. And that's why we were having an escalation in murders. People don't want to talk about this, but I'm going to talk about it. You had drug addicts that are now walking around this city looking for a fix. And that's the reason why they were breaking in hospitals and drug stores. They're looking for something to take the edge off of their Jones, if you will. And right now, they don't have anything to take the edge off. And they probably found guns. So what you're seeing is drug-starving, crazy addicts, drug addicts, that are wreaking havoc, and we don't have the manpower to adequately deal with. We can only target certain sections of the city and form a perimeter around them and hope to God that we're not overrun.
Well, you and I must be in the minority, because there, apparently there's a section of our citizenry out there that thinks because of a law that says the federal government can't come in unless requested by the proper people, that everything that's going on to this point has been done as good as it can possibly be.
Really?
I know you don't feel that way.
Well, did the tsunami victims request, you go through a formal process to request? Did the Iraqi people request that we go in there? Did they ask us to go in there? What is more important? This is, and I'll tell you, man, I'm probably going to get in a whole bunch of trouble. I'm probably going to get in so much trouble it ain't even funny. They probably won't even want to deal with me after this interview is over.
Well, you and I'll be in the funny place together.
But we authorized $8 billion to go to Iraq. Lickety-quick. After 9/11, we gave the president unprecedented powers, lickety-quick, to take care of New York and other places. Now, you mean to tell me that a place where most of your oil is coming through, a place that is so unique, when you mention New Orleans anywhere around the world, everybody's eyes light up. You mean to tell me that a place where you probably have thousands of people that have died and thousands more that are dying every day, that we can't figure out a way to authorize the resources that we need? Come on, man. You know, I'm not one of those drug addicts. I am thinking very clearly. And I don't know whose problem it is. I don't know whether it's the governor's problem. I don't know whether it's the president's problem. But somebody needs to get their ass on a plane and sit down, the two of them, and figure this out right now.
What can we do here?
Keep talking about it.
Okay. We'll do that. What else can we do?
Organize people to write letters, make calls to their congressmen, to the president, to the governor. Flood their doggone offices with requests to do something. This is ridiculous. I don't want to see anybody do any more goddamn press conferences. Put a moratorium on press conferences. I'll do another press conference until the resources are in this city, and then come down to this city and stand with us when there are military trucks and troops that we can't even count. Don't tell me 40,000 people are coming here. They're not here. It's too doggone late. Now get off your asses and let's do something, and let's fix the biggest goddamn crisis in the history of this country.
And I'll say it right now. You're the only politician that's called for arms like this. And if whatever it takes, the governor, president, whatever law precedent it takes, whatever it takes, I bet that the people listening to you are on your side.
Well, I hope so, Garland. I'm at the point now where it don't matter. People are dying. They don't have homes. They don't have jobs. The city of New Orleans will never be the same. And it's time.
We're both pretty speechless here.
I don't know what to say.
I gotta go.
Okay.
Keep in touch. Keep in touch.
And that was our recording of New Orleans Mayor Ray Nagin, as aired on a radio station down in New Orleans, and I think all over the world by now. Might have even aired over this radio station already, but I think it's worth... it's worth listening to, because Mayor Nagin is such a straight shooter as far as saying it like it is. And I think that the strain is obviously showing. He's been holed up in a hotel in New Orleans, refused to leave, refused to go to the really safe place with all the other elected officials. So he's kind of out of touch with people who have phones, people who have electricity, people who have the comforts of being safe. So I just think we'd be in so much better shape if there were more people like that actually running things, saying it like it is, cutting around all the crap, which quite frankly has cost many, many lives. They're talking about thousands of lives at this point. Now, I'm sitting here in Japan. It's Saturday, September 3rd. And things may very well change by the time this program actually airs. But right now, what they are looking at, it seems unfathomable to me, but thousands of dead. In fact, I even heard the figure 10,000 today. Now, I know after 9/11, figures like that were also thrown around, but there's something about this that just shows you how quickly things can spiral out of control. I want to read you a quote. This might put things in perspective a little more than even than what we just heard. And, you know, that recording just really, it gets me every time. I've heard it a bunch of times now, but I think it sums it up more than, well, certainly more than any other elected official I've heard trying to put a positive spin on things or whatever it is they're trying to do. This quote here, I think, might wake some people up. The whole recovery operation has been carried on the backs of the little guys for four goddamn days. The rest of the goddamn nation can't get us any resources for security. We are like little birds with our mouths open, and you don't have to be very smart to know where to drop the worm. It's criminal, within the confines of the United States, that within 1 hour of the hurricane, they weren't force-feeding us. It's like FEMA has never been to a hurricane. Now, who is that? Some angry guy in the street? Some homeless person? Somebody who stopped in the middle of looting to criticize the government? No, that is the Director of Homeland Security for New Orleans, Colonel Terry Ebert. Okay, so maybe that gives you a little bit of perspective. Here's another quote. "We're just a bunch of rats," said Earl Young, 31 years old, a cook who stood waiting in a throng of perhaps 10,000 people outside the Superdome, waiting in the blazing sun for buses to take them away from the city. That's how they've been treating us. I'm sure the stories are going to be coming out of New Orleans and the Superdome and all kinds of other places as to all the horrible things that have been going on, that have been allowed to go on, the things that have happened in the streets and probably continue to happen up until this point. Here's another eyewitness account, this coming from the internet, by Jordan Flaherty. He's a union organizer and an editor of Left Turn magazine, and the website is www.leftturn.org. Native of New Orleans, someone who's not planning to leave, not planning to move out, that is. I think everybody at this point is planning to leave. And this is dated Friday, September 2nd. "I just left New Orleans a couple of hours ago. I traveled from the apartment I was staying in by boat to a helicopter to a refugee camp." Yeah, a refugee camp. We're using words like that in this country. I know a lot of people are angry about that. Some lawmakers said we shouldn't be calling these people refugees. They're Americans. Okay, great. You know what? They're American refugees. Does that make you feel better? They're refugees. Deal with it. Making it sound nicer than it is not going to solve anything. It's a refugee camp, filled with refugees, and it might as well be the third world for all the good that has been done for these people. All right, let me continue with this and try not to lapse off into my own commentary. "If anyone wants to examine the attitude of federal and state officials towards the victims of Hurricane Katrina, I advise you to visit one of the refugee camps. In the camp I just left on the I-10 freeway near Causeway," actually name a town, Causeway? Interesting. "Thousands of people, at least 90% black and poor, stood and squatted in mud and trash behind metal barricades under an unforgiving sun, with heavily armed soldiers standing guard over them. When a bus would come through, it would stop at a random spot. State police would open a gap in one of the barricades, and people would rush for the bus, with no information given about where the bus was going. Once inside, we were told, evacuees would be told where the bus was taking them, Baton Rouge, Houston, Arkansas, Dallas, or other locations. I was told that if you boarded a bus bound for Arkansas, for example, even people with family and a place to stay in Baton Rouge would not be allowed to get out of the bus as it passed through Baton Rouge. You had no choice but to go to the shelter in Arkansas. If you had people willing to come to New Orleans to pick you up, they could not come within 17 miles of the camp. I traveled through the camp and spoke to Red Cross workers, Salvation Army workers, National Guard, and state police. And although they were friendly, no one could give me any details on when buses would arrive, how many, where they would go to, or any other information. I spoke to the several teams of journalists nearby and asked if any of them had been able to get any information from any federal or state officials on any of these questions, and all of them, from Australian TV to local Fox affiliates, complained of an unorganized, non-communicative mess. One cameraman told me, as someone who's been here in this camp for 2 days, the only information I can give you is this. Get out by nightfall. You don't want to be here at night. There was also no visible attempt by any of those running the camp to set up any sort of transparent and consistent system, like a line to get on buses, a way to register contact information or find family members, special needs services for children and infirm, phone services, treatment for possible disease exposure, not even a single trash can. It's just unbelievable. I could read these excerpts all night long. And they all seem to say the same thing. The reports I've seen on television, the newspaper reports from Japanese newspapers, from American newspapers, from everywhere, they all say the same thing. They all talk about these horrendous conditions, about the uncaring of the authorities, the way these people were abandoned, sacrificed. It's utterly, absolutely disgusting. And then we hear the stories of the looters. And yes, you know, the looters and the armed gangs, these are horrible things. Well, let me clarify that. Let me clarify that. There is nothing wrong with breaking into a store and taking food if you are starving and left out to fend for yourself, and there is nobody taking care of you at all, and there is no way for you to get out. You can either lie down and die, or you can get what you need to survive. And I'll say that right now. If I was down there, I would be with those people, taking whatever it is I needed to survive. Because that's how you have to live in a situation like this. These people have no food. They have no supplies coming. Of course, it makes sense. But people like Bush, people like the governor of Louisiana, all they can say is zero tolerance. The National Guard has their guns ready, and they know how to kill people, and they will if they catch people looting. As if that is the most important thing. What about the people who are dying in the streets of disease, of neglect? What about them? Should that not be the priority, rather than protecting property, which is going to be destroyed anyway? Yeah, you know, the people who are going around taking TV sets, they're a bunch of idiots, I know. Who the hell needs a TV set now, especially when there's no electricity? I can understand the frustration. You've done without for so long, and here's a chance to finally get something. Why not? But I don't condone that kind of thing. I do condone people taking food, taking things to drink to survive. And you're a damn fool if you think that that kind of a thing is not going to happen and should not happen. And I just cannot believe that the emphasis is being placed on this, that we see pickup trucks filled with soldiers and police, with guns aimed at people. Not people who are looting, people who are just standing on the street. Look at the video. The guns are pointed at them. As if this is Baghdad or something, which I imagine is probably in the minds of a lot of these people. And meanwhile, we read story after story about people who are simply passing away on the street, dying of starvation. And what is with these draconian rules that are set up on the spot? No, you may not get off the bus if your house happens to be on the way and it's dry and safe. No, we won't tell you where you're going until you're actually going there. What is up with that? Why are these people being treated this way? These are not even prisoners. Prisoners should not be treated this way. And yet I see instance after instance of these poor people being utterly, utterly mistreated. And now, of course, you have roving gangs with guns. Well, guess what? You know why that happened? Because great institutions like Walmart sell full arsenals of weapons, and when they abandoned their store, they left all that behind. You know, it doesn't take very much to figure it out. That if you have a situation of emergency, where lawlessness pretty much is the rule, and all kinds of people are running around grabbing whatever they can. Yeah, you know what? They're going to grab the guns. And when they grab the guns, they become armed criminals. Yeah. Doesn't that make you feel a whole lot safer? So the prevalence of guns down there has simply made things even worse. Now, I know there are people who are going to say, well, I'll get my gun then, and we'll have a gun battle in the street. Great. You know, while people are killing themselves that way, more people are dying of starvation and disease. What a great country this has become. You know, in the tsunami, after the tsunami hit, hundreds of thousands of people died there. But the people were not killing each other. And I think that's something we really need to look at, how things have turned in this country, where we're so divisive, so violent, that it comes to this. Yeah, a little bit of thinking, a little bit of planning, these wouldn't have become armed criminals. They still would have been dangerous, they still should have been dealt with one way or another. But they wouldn't have had the power they have now. I mean, they were basically out shooting the police. The police had to abandon their post because they could not win. Who feels more secure having access to that kind of armament? It makes no sense to me. Walmart suddenly becomes a place to stock an army. It got so bad that police even were raiding stores to get bullets. If it wasn't so horribly tragic, it would be funny. I honestly hope that by the time this program airs, things will have improved significantly in New Orleans. And I honestly hope that maybe there'll be some idea of the death toll and it won't be anywhere near what people are predicting. But I gotta say, looking at what I'm reading in front of me, what I've been seeing, it doesn't look good. It doesn't look good at all. And if there's any good to come out of this, maybe people will finally take a good, long, hard look at our priorities and look closely at those people who set the priorities to what they are. Look at how this crazy war overseas this crazy military adventure has hurt us in so many ways. Hold those people accountable. Do something about it. Because this is just one example of how we're hurting because of that. And what a horrible example it was. Well, I really wanted this to be a more happy show. Being here in Japan for the first time in my life. But I think it would have been wrong to not focus on this horrible event that's taken place back home. I feel so helpless over here. So far away from the States. Still a couple of weeks away from getting back. But there's only so much you can do. Please, donate what you can. Get on the internet, search for donation sites. Don't donate to Pat Robertson's site. I know that that FEMA has, the new FEMA, I guess we should call them, the ones that, the FEMA that George W. Bush has converted the old FEMA into, they have a list of places to donate, and I think the second organization after the Red Cross is a group run by Pat Robertson. You know, it's so crazy, so surreal, I don't even know what to believe anymore, but that is true. Go on the internet, look for legitimate sites, donate to them. I know that our government should be taking care of this, but clearly they're not, so we're going to have to take care of it ourselves, at least for now. Next week I'll be in Tokyo. Well, I guess if anything typifies the sound of Japan, that would be the 5678s. And maybe next week we'll have more of a Japanese flavor to the show. It would be nice. All right, folks, hang in there. Stay strong. Keep informed. Write to us, otw@2600.com. Emmanuel Goldstein for Off the Wall.